This is Michael Edward Miller for WTC, and this is the second episode of our Operation Song series. Last summer, Nashville songwriters Don Goodman and Steve Dean met Matthew Sembervich, a veteran of the Second World War. Dr. Sembervich is 92. He was at Erlanger Hospital for one of a series of rehab sessions. Don Goodman and Steve Dean were in town for an Operation Song session. Every week, the Nashville-based songwriters come to town to lead a therapy session with a group of military veterans. The veterans tell their stories about their experiences in the war, while the songwriters help them turn those stories into songs. The two songwriters were introduced to Sembervich by a nurse who said he was a man they had to meet. He has many harrowing stories about his experiences in World War II. The songwriters turned one of his stories into a song called Ensign Matthew. Here's Don Goodman.
And I'm going to read you just a piece of a lyric. I lied about my age. I was barely 17. A small-town Jewish boy, young and dumb and green. We sailed from New Orleans in the Gulf of Mexico. The Oklahoma 799 was on her way to Tokyo. Barrel-rolling Zeros came out of the sun. So afraid but young and brave, we stood and fired our guns. Hell bent on sinking us. We shot them down in flames. And when the fight was over, the deck was covered with pieces of those planes.
That was World War II, and now I'm 91. Alive and well and looking back on things I have done. Youth and blood was the price to keep this country free. And if I'm still here, I proudly fight. If there's a World War III.
In 1941, Louis Arthur Sembervich, a 17-year-old Jewish boy from upstate New York, lied about his age and enlisted in the Navy. But rather than send him to war, the Navy sent him to Cornell University for 3 years of officer training in their midshipman school. He graduated from the program in the summer of 1944, one of the youngest ensigns in the Navy. He shipped out as the communications officer on a cargo freighter. Within a year, he had been promoted to gunnery officer in charge of all the armaments on the freighter. The song he wrote with Don Goodman and Steve Dean is about an incident that occurred when the freighter was anchored off the coast of Okinawa. Loaded with 2,200 tons of ammunition, it was waiting to be unloaded for use by the troops who were stationed on Okinawa before the invasion of Japan in 1945. The boat, chock full of live ammunition, was a sitting duck, as Matthew put it. Louis Arthur Sembervich changed his name to Matthew after the war when he converted to Christianity in an effort to heal from the horrors he'd witnessed in the war. That was nearly 70 years ago. He's still trying to come to terms with those horrors he witnessed.
You're on a cargo ship carrying ammunition?
That's right.
And being attacked by Japanese planes?
That's right.
If a bullet hit them, they were a grease fire.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting. Yeah.
That's why they fought so hard.
I mean, it's big enough. It's not that hard to hit it, I wouldn't say.
Oh, no. We would be gone like a whisper. I remember one day, the crew started streaming up from forecastles, which are hatchway entrances, forward, just behind that assemblage of gun mounts.
And up in front.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I said, what's going on here? I got a hold of the petty officer of the watch. I said, what the H is this? And they had heard a broadcast from Tokyo Rose saying that our ship had been sunk. Can you imagine that? The ship that I'm on is gone. It has, and she named the ship. Can you imagine?
Is this Tokyo Rose?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess we shrugged it off. We had other things to do.
How did it happen that they started attacking you? What, you're just a cargo ship, right?
That's
was that typical? Did they do that?
What,
the Japanese attack cargo ships?
No, this was part of the D-Day plus two. They had put us over because of our cargo in a place called Kuramoreto, which are a bunch of reefs. And then the beachmaster called us up, this one, this one, this one. Imagine a beach with ships nosed up on this beach, side by side by side.
This is in the Philippines?
No, it's Okinawa.
Oh, in Okinawa. Yeah. Oh, gotcha.
And I got permission from the captain. I said, can I go aloft and get an eye view of this? He said, yes, you can. He said, I'll check and make sure that the power is off. And I got up and went up to the crow's nest, and I looked around. In every direction that I looked, I saw American power. I saw ships of every kind, make, form, shape, all doing the same thing, delivering men and materiel to take on the Japanese. And we did. And
the objective would be to invade Japan from Okinawa?
Oh, yes. That was clear. By then, when you're in the middle of a combat zone, you learn a lot of things just by observing and reaching conclusions, your own conclusions. We knew why we were there. We knew what we had to do. We were making smoke for some heavy cruisers that were laying down shore bombardment, and we were there to get the job done, which we did. I had the watch. All the interesting things happened on my watch. And the Japanese had planes above that just circled out of our anti-aircraft range. They wore us down. I didn't get a night's sleep for 2 weeks and maybe more.
So it was a war of nerves.
It was a war of nerves, absolutely. I'm glad you used that term. That's exactly what it was. This one plane came down on the cruiser Birmingham. One of my gunner's mates, his brother was on that ship. Circled. And then he came down in the manner of a kamikaze. Then he changed his mind. And he came up our port side. That's the left side of the vessel looking forward. And he did bow overs like that. His canopy was back. He was that close to me. I'm telling you, I swear as I'm here. I looked into his eyes. And as he came level with where I was, I heard a oomp. And the aft twin Bofors, 40 millimeter, cut him to pieces. He just was pulverized. Those pieces landed on the main deck of my ship. And one of my gunner's mates, little Italian-American, Buttacavalli, call him Butterball, he said, hey, look what I got for you. He scooped him up and brought him up to the con where I was. You know, I brought him home. That's my war souvenirs.
Well, what was this guy doing? Was he playing chicken with you?
I can only guess that he was... He had to do something fast because kamikazes were loaded not so much with explosives as they were high-octane fuel. And the idea was you hit this enemy vessel and it went up like that. It was more powerful than bombs, actually. He changed his mind. He'd done the circling. He came down up our port side. Canopy went back. He did a couple of barrel overs very slowly. You don't do barrel overs at high speed at that altitude. And as I say, aft, twin Bofors 40 millimeters, a powerful and very accurate weapon at that distance. I went to pieces. My gunner's mate brought those pieces up to the con. I brought them back as my war souvenir.
But while that nerve-wracking encounter may well have been more than enough to scar a young man, it's not the reason Matthew still has nightmares about the war some 70 years later. Following that harrowing encounter with the kamikaze pilot, the freighter left Okinawa, loaded with troops, headed for Japan. They landed on the shore of Nagasaki just after the detonation of the second atomic bomb.
I stood at Nagasaki on that crystallized sand and stared at the atrocity that man had done to man. Out of all of that insanity, I found Christianity. From the horrors of that war, I found peace. That was World War II, and now I'm 91, alive and well and looking back on the things that I have done. When I think of all the lives we lost to keep this country free, I fall down on my knees.
pray there'll never be a World War III. Fall down on my knees and pray there'll never be a World War III.
And you talked about Hitler being the face of evil. But at the same time, you had difficulty coming to terms with what America did to Hiroshima, didn't you?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I was there. I walked on the ashes of Nagasaki. My ship got there eventually, you know. We brought in occupation troops. Remember on this mound of ashes, I said to Runge, a big Norwegian friend of mine from my ship, I said, I've got to get on top of this and get a proper view of it. And I went up and I pivoted left and right. Everywhere I looked, I could see nothing but nothing. How can you see nothing when there's nothing, there was nothing, it had been absolutely obliterated. Then I heard a weeping, such a sound of a child that came out from behind this pile of ashes, a little girl, and she was weeping. Oh, I'll never forget it. That was her country, you know, and we had obliterated it. Was it necessary? Was it necessary to have done it in that way? Historians were discussing that, I suppose, forever. About then, a Jeep patrol came in and said, "Sir, what are you doing up there?" I said, I'm viewing the view. I said, "This is what my people did." He said, "When you leave here, sir, and you will leave, you're going to go back home and make babies, right?" I said, "Of course. What else?" He said, "Well, you won't make babies with the radioactive presence that is here unless you get your butt out of here, sir." And he took off in the Jeep, and that was that.
You know, can I make a statement here?
Yes.
There you have it. There's 70 years of a demon, of a nightmare. And the Vietnam guys we're working with, you've been there while we work with them.
Yeah.
They're carrying these demons 50 years. All right. Iraq, Afghanistan, the Middle East, Persian Gulf. We're going to have kids coming home, thousands of them, who've going to have demons with them. You don't come home from war. War comes home with you.
Right.
Operation Song gives us the chance to let you tell that story. The world needed to hear your words, Matt, and I am honored that I had the chance to help you put them to music. Thank you, sir.
And I'm honored to be here. Thank you so much. It's wonderful. This is a great event of my life.
And mine, sir.
God love you.
And you, sir.
If you'd like more information about Operation Song, their website is operationsong.org, or you can call Barbara Allison Standifer. Ms. Standifer's number is 706-935-3686. 706-935-3686. For WUTC's Around and About, I'm Richard Winham.